Hi, this is Leslie.
This is Genevieve.
And this is Brock, and we want to welcome you back, or for the first time, to Las Vegas Weekly's Second Helping Podcast, where we go beyond the printed and digital pages of the Las Vegas Weekly food and drink section for a deeper exploration of the culinary scene across the Las Vegas Valley. You can listen to Second Helping by subscribing to our Las Vegas Weekly stream on YouTube at Apple Podcasts, where you should also subscribe so you won't miss a single episode, and at lasvegasweekly.com/podcasts, where you can also check out the All the Vegas podcast, hosted by yours truly with Mark Chinook, who you may know as the in-arena host for Vegas Golden Knights games at T-Mobile Arena and as the creator and host of Monday's Dark at the Space. All the Vegas has a different Vegas personality as our guest for a fun conversation in every episode. Sometimes it's an entertainer from the Strip, sometimes it's a pro athlete from a Vegas sports team, and sometimes it's a chef from one of our favorite new restaurants. So if you've been listening to us here at Second Helping, I guess we're serving up a third helping of Vegas food fun every now and then at All the Vegas, and you should check it out.
If you've been faithfully reading Las Vegas Weekly magazine, and we're sure you have, you must have seen our recent cover feature showcasing some of the incredible female chefs and restaurateurs that continue to help shape the local dining scene. Staff writer Cindy Moon Reed and I hosted five of the Valley's top female chefs for a lively roundtable discussion, covering everything from their earliest food memories to their experiences getting to where they are now. It was a candid and moving discussion of what it's like to be a woman in a male-dominated industry and the sacrifices made along the way. There were a few tears and a whole lot of laughter, and in the end, we were all very hungry. After all, a roundtable with five chefs will inevitably involve a lot of talk about food. To read more about these exceptional ladies, you can visit lasvegasweekly.com, but we're going to share a little extra fun from that epic chef conversation.
This is Jamie Tran from The Black Sheep talking about one of her favorite things to cook at her restaurant.
It's going to go the imperial rolls. It's my mom. She taught me that. I'll never take it off the menu. It's something, I don't know, it's just I don't really eat in the kitchen. I don't really eat what I make. But the one thing that my cooks notice is the imperial rolls. I'll just be munching on it. They're like, chef, you don't eat, but you eat the imperial rolls. Why? I was like, I think it just... It sparks, like, memories for me. Like, my mom just been that comfort, like, eating that. And it's fried food. I don't know. It's good.
Is it imperial? How do you spell
imperial
it?
Imperial rolls? I can't say it. It sounds so, like, imperial. I can't say it.
Somebody say it.
Imperial.
Imperial. I can't. I'm like, I have that weird, like...
No, it's okay. I just wanted to make sure. I just want to make sure I get it right.
And here's Megan Shaver, chef at the Spadini Italian restaurant at the JW Marriott Resort in Summerlin, followed by Gina Marinelli, chef and partner at La Strega, also in Summerlin.
Maybe are we doing a snapper with an artichoke puree and some fried caper berries and pancettas?
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
You didn't bring me a snapper. Sorry.
Right now, this is Gina. We're doing a Nigerian prawns that we just pour clam tomato broth tableside. I like making broths. I think it's a lot more love than I put my toe in that one, so. Not literally. It's not my piece for chef.
That was the secret.
And they're like, that's what it is.
Nicole Brisson, a very familiar face who's cooked on the Strip for years at Carnivino and most recently at Italy at Park MGM. She just opened Locale, her first neighborhood restaurant in Las Vegas. Listen to her talking about what she's cooking right now. Nicole is followed by chef Leticia Nunez from the Bacchanal Buffet at Caesar's Palace, who's going back to her roots for her current favorites.
I just recently put on a Baroque ragu, which sounds like very simplistic and very rustic, but it was one of the first things that I learned from one of my first mentors when I was 14 years old. And it is a simple ragu, but it's so much more complicated than that. It's five different meats, three of them hand-cut, two of them ground, three different stages of reduction. It's finished with cream and clove, which are luxurious ingredients during the Baroque era that because they had more money, because they had more luxuries at that time, it's more of like a sexy ragu. And you put a lot of effort into it, everything's browned separately and put together in stages, and I think it's just a perfect example of how we develop flavors. You know, it's layered, it comes together as one in the end, and it's a homogeneous beautiful dish, and I think it's a good representation of everything we do daily.
Sounds like a lot of work, too.
This brings me back to my training time with Chef Andre, doing soups and sauces, and so lobster bisque is one of my favorite things to make, and I can't ever get enough of that. That's one thing that I'm always trying to perfect, and someday I will before I die. But some other people have perfected it in their own way, but to me it still needs some work. And so lobster bisque, mac and cheese is what we have new at our seafood kitchen, and the clam bake with the chorizo salsa, a little bit of Spanish influences in there. Is having fun with some dishes, lentil ragu, and we just started doing I'm going to start doing, actually. I'm working. This is in the pre-working of the kitchen of bison short ribs with some really cool different vegetable purees that I'm just trying out. And it's always something to do, something fun. But mac and cheese is one of my favorite things, and the lobster bisque that we have.
And then it's not normal probably that to have chefs, especially of different restaurants, all together like this. So is there anything that you would ask? Do you have any questions for each other or things that you would want to tell each other?
I think that usually happens over drinks.
I think we've told each other a lot more than we've told anybody. Right? Yes. We just put out our hearts right here.
So any questions, I guess?
I think that we're learning from each other every day, you know, and I think that's the great thing about the culinary scene changing in Vegas right now is it's making it naturally more competitive. And as much as we're all here, I think we, as much as we're friends and we would love to have a couple drinks at the end of this, we are competitive. And the better that Jamie mm-hmm. does, the more it inspires me to be better. The better that yeah. Gina does, the more I'm going to strive to be. And it's just a natural progression, I think, in life and our careers. And I think that's what I like the most about the industry here in Vegas right now. You know, I don't think we have to cry on each other's shoulders to really know. Like, I think we all naturally know what we go through every day. And, you know, there's, I think the time that you learn from each other is when we're at events and we're having fun and we're tasting and entertaining and drinking.
It was really exciting to have a bunch of chefs visit our office. I wanted to offer them lunch, but that would have been too intimidating. What'd you think of the roundtable experience, Genevieve?
Well, that was definitely one of the most memorable things I've ever done in my career as a food writer and editor. I was moved by these women's stories.
How so?
This kind of career seems really difficult, and it takes a very special kind of personality to survive and to thrive in this world. I think sometimes we go to a restaurant, see a well-plated meal, and never think about it beyond that, but there's so much work that goes into it.
I completely agree. I love eating out, but I could never be a chef because cooking is hard. Chatting with these chefs and watching them connect with each other was truly a special experience.
So, Cindy, you were a recent guest on another Vegas food podcast that we love called Spicy Eyes from our friends Christy Totten and Sonia Swanson. And I would definitely recommend everybody check out Spicy Eyes at spicyeyespod.com. But they had you on their show to talk about buffets in Las Vegas. And by the way, you were great.
Oh, thank you so much. It was such an honor to be there. I really had a lot of fun. And they made me tea.
Oh, wow. We need to start doing tea service here at Second Helping or some kind of service.
Yeah. I mean, what is the helping if we're not serving anything?
It was really fun to listen to. I really liked how you were talking about buffets as being kind of like the signature dining experience in Las Vegas because we don't have a style of food or cooking like other cities do or other regions of the country might. And we don't have like a single dish to identify our city with, like a Philly cheesesteak or a Nashville hot chicken or anything like that. But buffets as kind of the representation of Vegas food is a really interesting idea. And it got me thinking about what might be the most popular food in Las Vegas, or the food that's eaten the most. Do you have any ideas about what that might be?
Well, since the Popeye's chicken sandwich is sold out, I'm going to say that the most popular cuisine in Las Vegas is booze, especially if it's free. Free alcohol is the most popular cuisine in Las Vegas.
I don't know if that counts as cuisine, but that's probably the correct answer. I think you're onto something, though. I think my guess would be fried chicken because there's so many. I mean, obviously, we have all the different fast food chains like Popeyes that specialize in fried chicken. But then we also have so many different kinds of restaurants, fine dining down to casual restaurants and bars that have to put that on the menu just because it's so popular. And my years of covering clubs in Las Vegas have taught me the most popular poolside snack at Las Vegas day clubs.
Oh, can I guess?
You already know what it is.
Booze?
It's chicken fingers.
Chicken fingers. Oh,
you got to have chicken fingers with the booze.
That was going to be my second guess, chicken fingers.
Yes, yes. No day club visit is complete without an order of chicken fingers and fries.
And so I heard that you just visited the newest chicken joint in town, Crack Shack at Park MGM on the Strip. Also, you didn't bring me. Can we talk about how you need to start bringing me to all the restaurants? Anyways, what did you think about Crack Shack?
It was really good, actually. There are a lot of different chicken sandwiches on the menu, and they have some unique flavor combinations. There's a lot of lighter fare and salads to choose from, and they also serve chicken oysters. I don't know if you've ever had that before. It's a really tender, delicious little morsel of meat that is not always used when you're ordering chickens and cutting them up and using them for various dishes in restaurants. But yes, I ate all of the chicken, and I also got to talk with Richard Blaze, who you know from TV's Top Chef, all about opening his first Crack Shack outside of California.
As a celebrity chef, you know, I'm doing air quotes, by the way. Are you recording? I don't know.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
That's okay.
Yeah, of course. You know, I mean, it is kind of that weird, like, you know, when you get to Vegas, like, is that it almost like, hopefully I'm not oversharing, but like almost validates like some sort of celebrity chefness because, yeah. You know, I'm coming off the airplane and there's Gordon's face and there's Giada and my friend Guy Fieri's got a place across the street, not to mention all the, you know, world famous culinary talents that are here that, you know, aren't on Food Network or Top Chef or whatever. So it's a pretty big honor. I guess what I'm saying is it's an honor. I could have just said that.
Yeah, I mean, you are a celebrity chef, a different kind of celebrity chef, I guess, than the names that people recognize in Vegas. And that had a big impact in Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, first of all, I'm not Gordon Ramsay or Guy Fieri, and I don't have that sort of household recognition. And I sort of sit on that fence of like, oh, he's a TV chef, but or he's a real. I mean, we're all both, quite honestly. You know, me and Gordon, these are friends. You know, but I guess it helps me feel like I'm heading that way, which is great. Yeah.
In a world of fried chicken,
yes.
Where fried chicken is on every menu,
yeah.
What is the secret to doing a great version of fried chicken that will stand out?
Yeah. I mean, I think for us it was pretty... I think a lot of fried chicken places are understandably sort of like their origins are like the Deep South, right? And, you know, although we have biscuits on the menu and, our chicken batter, you know, might be a version of a Southern recipe, we're Southern California. Which is, it sounds like a, you know, sort of, oh, it's a punny sort of thing to say. But I think that's really what one of the big differentiators is for us is that, our take on it is a little lighter, a little fresher. There's lots of Mexican influence because, you know, our first location was in San Diego and it's so close to the border. And I think generally that's the type of food that we like to eat as well. So I would say it's lighter. It's not as heavy, even though it's fried chicken. I think that's one, and sandwich based as well, sandwich and salad based. Where a lot of fried chicken places, it's just fried chicken and maybe one sandwich. We have a pretty wide variety of things. You know, a lot of the sandwiches have some sort of traditional origin, or we have the California dip, which is a version of like a San Diego, you know, that our chef John Sloan here created. It's kind of a version of the classic San Diego burrito meats. You know, the French dip sandwich. So yeah, I mean, I personally also, you know, enjoy the grilled items and the braised items as well.
I'm sure you haven't gotten too much time in the months leading up to this opening, but have you been able to kind of explore the property a little bit? There's so much new stuff here. Duck into Roy's place or go visit the Nomad guys.
Yes. I haven't had a lot of chance. We did just go say hi to Roy's team. You know, I'm still figuring out that, you know, there's this whole, the whole catacombs of all of these casinos where I walked in three kitchens. I don't even know how. I could not get back to my own restaurant, quite honestly. So I'm still figuring it out. But I've always been a fan of Vegas. It's just alive. You know, as a native New Yorker, you know, there aren't too many places outside of New York and Vegas. You know, you might find a little neighborhood that's just awake, almost awake 24 hours, that has this energy to it, that, like, as soon as you land, you know, like, you're someplace special. I have not sat poolside yet, but I'm looking forward to some. I'm a big spa guy, so yeah, hopefully if we get some time and I have some time to relax, I'm sure I'll hit some amazing spa here at the Nomad.
It's good stuff all, of course, up and down the strip.
The whole place. And I'm also like a big fitness guy, so I am really excited about exploring what is probably more of like the locals' Vegas. And like, I like running in the 100-degree heat. I'm weird like that. So I want to get out in some of the mountains and do a little hiking experience the things that most people don't think of right away. And the sports. I'm a massive sports guy. So the fact that we're right here next to the hockey arena, and for the first time today, I took a road that went by the new football stadium, which looks like the Death Star, which is like perfect for the Raiders. I was like, they're building the Death Star. They should just call it the Death Star and just call it Disney right now.
That has been the... We just did a podcast this week, and we were talking about, because it just got its name, Allegiant Stadium.
Right. Oh, perfect.
For the airline.
Yeah.
But we were talking about how different stadiums have nicknames and stuff like that. People have already started calling
it
that.
I'm not the first one?
So
okay. Well, good. I felt like I was original.
Well, yeah, when you look at it, it does have that kind of imposing thing, so we'll see if that sticks.
Yeah, I like that. Gruden as the emperor. I think there's some... I think that could work, actually.
Crack Shack Chicken Joint is open late right on Las Vegas Boulevard. It's on the strip next door to Eataly. I recommend that you check it out. Next up, Genevieve is spending time with a different Las Vegas chef for a brand new segment that you're going to hear a lot more of here on Second Helping.
If you're a serious foodie, you're not just curious about what's on your plate when you go to a restaurant. The chefs themselves kind of become this mythical figure in your mind. Especially if you're like me, who struggles with putting together a decent meal without running to the internet for a recipe. What I'm always curious about, though, is what chefs have in their fridge at home. Sure, they have these massive walk-ins at their restaurants that have everything they could possibly need, but what do they actually cook in their own time? In the Second Helping segment, we take a peek behind the curtain of the Valley's most distinguished chefs. First up, Justin Kingsley Hall, whose resume includes Comsa, Slow Boy, Sparrow and Wolf, Whiskey in the Wilderness, The Kitchen at Atomic, and his highly anticipated downtown restaurant, Main Street Provisions, set to open later this year. He also gave me a preview of the upcoming Beyond the Neon dinner at the James Beard House in New York City on September 7th, in which Las Vegas' top chefs will be participating. After this interview, I left feeling inspired and immediately Googled how to cook a brand Zeno, because, well, I better start keeping that in my fridge, too.
We are going to look into your fridge right now. So what do you have for us?
So my fridge is always like a mass collection of stuff between having two kids, my wife and I. At any given time, like right now, I have lamb, rabbit, smoked pork belly, bronzino, octopus, as far as like proteins go, but then I have radishes, apples, kale, a lot of stuff from Desert Bloom Farms, which my friend Claudia owns, so I use a lot of her vegetables at the restaurant, but I also end up getting a lot of vegetables for the housewarmer, along with eggs. We go through a lot of eggs in our house. Our children like love them, so it's pretty easy to go through like 2 dozen eggs very quickly. But usually I always have some staples. There's always like tomatoes. My son loves to snack on cherry tomatoes. There's always some kind of mixed greens of like kale and some pea shoots.
Do your kids eat kale?
Yeah, actually Kingsley, both my kids, my son turns 3 in October, and my daughter the day before turns 1. Mm-hmm. But he eats a lot of like kale slaw and stuff like that. He loves. He's a fairly like weird kid. Like any given day, like he hates something, but he eats everything under the sun. And now my daughter's like the same way. Like they love lamb. That's usually like the easiest thing to get them to eat. So I usually have a lot of that. I've been trying to like do more juices lately because I'm trying to figure out how to be healthier in my life. So now it's like I've got all these apples, celery, more kale than usual, things like that. But he usually will come in and try and get the refrigerator open, and he'll grab tomatoes, cheese, or apples and kind of like go snack. Randomly, there's some kind of bubbles. Champagne, mezcal, and rosé are kind of good staples. There's also some like crappier alcohol stuff. That's definitely my wife's. I think I took a picture one time in my fridge, and I posted something, and then I had a few text messages from people being like, "You literally drink that?" And I was like, "It's not me. It's my wife." So there's, I mean, and then all of the leftovers of stuff we make. You know, usually I always make far more food than we need, but it's great because then it goes to school with the kids and stuff, and they're pretty excited.
So do you cook every night?
Right now, just about every single night. When I'm, like, in the restaurants full-time, I still always, like, I always shop at least once a week for the house. I'll take my son with me or something, and I'll pack the fridge. Most of the time I'm going to, like, Whole Foods. But I pack the fridge, and if I have a day off, it's more often that I cook at home than I don't, because it's really important to me to be able to do that. So if I get the chance, I'm cooking at home when I can. But right now, since waiting for the restaurant to open, even though I've been traveling a lot and doing a lot of events and pop-ups, I've been able to cook at home quite a bit more.
Is there something that you cook most consistently, or a request that your kids make?
Not necessarily. Like, honestly, like, it's always all over the place. And with the kids, like I said, like, you know, there's nothing that he eats so consistently that I, like, keep making it. So it's like today he will eat a bunch of meat. Tomorrow he's vegan. Then it's like he'll eat half a bronzino by himself, so I have to make enough for like the whole family, and my daughter will start crushing. So I always just like sometime during the week I always try to make some kind of seafood, some kind of meat, some kind of vegetarian, but it's usually like more about like having those snack items around for them that you can kind of get at. So yeah, like, and then typically what I cook at home, a lot of times it's exactly how I would cook in the restaurant. There's not a big difference. Mm-hmm. And most times I take a lot of time to plate up the food like I would at the restaurant. So it's really not like a huge like difference.
Do you just cook whatever is on hand, or do you plan it out, or?
I don't plan at all for the most part. I go to the store with like an idea.
Yeah.
And I visit every single aisle almost twice. And then sometimes I'll unpack things and go back and get something different. And then I'll come home and be like, yeah, I'm definitely making this dish tonight. And then I'm like, wait, I don't want to do that. And I switch it up. My wife's much different. Like, she likes to know exactly what. So, like, the fridge could be this full. She'll look at it and be like, there's nothing to cook. So if I'm not cooking or I'm gone and I go grocery shopping, I usually, like, leave a list that says, like, what I would make from it. And then from there, she kind of, like, crushes everything out. I just always know, like, you know, I don't want to do seafood. I want to make sure there's some kind of greenage, some kind of good vegetables. I love mushrooms, things like that. Starch is kind of all over the place. Mostly, like, we do a lot of rice. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. No problem. That fridge looks awesome. We're coming over for dinner.
I know, right?
Well, thank you.
Well, and that's the thing, too. Like, I'm pretty big about whenever we cook dinner, or like there's always like an open invitation for like friends, or like people may come over or something. So it's always like a big thing too, to make enough food. So if, mm-hmm. you know, my buddy Dan Cromer lives around the corner, so they've always like got an open invitation. My friend Jolene Menina's down the street, so we have like a great little community.
Wow. So, but, that's awesome. You participate in the James Beard House
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
It's super exciting. I've had the chance to cook at the James Beard House twice, assisting other chefs, Brian Howard and Sam Marvin. And now we're kind of, you know, Brian Howard helped push this dinner together, this Beyond the Neon, of kind of a big display of, like, what's happening off-strip. You know, we know there's great food on-strip. It's been somewhat lacking over the years off-strip, and now you've got Brian Howard and Gina Marinelli and Nicole Bryson, like, everybody pushing more and more off-strip. So it's great. So Brian really wanted to kind of push that idea and let people know. And to be asked to be part of it was incredible because, like I said in a post, I never even planned to live in Vegas. I never even thought I would build a career here or be here almost 9 years. So to be a part of that is really special. And especially opening up Main Street Provisions soon. I mean, it's kind of a great way to start a restaurant opening, right? It's like, okay. Pre-opening will be at the James Beard House. we're all coming together. The chefs are pairing up for, you know, two of us on each course. So Chef Kai, Vu, and I will be on a beef course, which is exciting because Kai and I are little misfits together.
Do you know what you're making yet?
Yeah, we're doing, it's a Vietnamese braised short rib. Like what Kai explained to me, like, you know, it's almost kind of like this Vietnamese, like beef bourguignon. But it's a braised short rib with an inspiration from my American roots and the South and everything. So it'll be a vintage grass-fed beef from Tasmania. So it's a sustainable beef that I use. But we're doing braised beef with an Anson Mills grit cake, smoked carrot, and then a reduction of the sauce as the demi on it.
That sounds amazing.
Oh, and then we're also doing a Vietnamese dumpling. It's a tapioca-based dough steamed in banana leaves. But instead of, he's given me some kind of the mixtures that have been pork and shrimp and things like that. So we're doing, again, like a little bit of a Southern idea, but it's going to be a black pepper rabbit and mustard greens. So it'll be a really interesting kind of blend of the two of us. Yeah. So
that's cool. I hope you bring the dinner here, like the vegan dinner.
That's the idea. Is that we'll do this dinner in New York together. We'll come back, do it again, and then hopefully, like one by one, I'll do our own dinners. Mm-hmm. So really, kind of keep pushing it. Keep the excitement, momentum going for Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, James Beard House is just going to move here.
This episode of Second Helping is also brought to you by the Wolfgang Puck Fine Dining Group, which operates 6 incredible restaurants on and off the Las Vegas Strip: Wolfgang Puck Bar and Grill at MGM Grand and at Downtown Summerlin, Spago at Bellagio, Lupo at Mandalay Bay, Cut at Palazzo, and Cucina at the Shops at Crystals. Everyone knows Wolfgang Puck, but did you know there are some very cool tableside service presentations at the company's Italian restaurants? It's true. Cucina, which is a real hidden gem on the Strip thanks to the free valet parking nearby at the Shops at Crystals, and that's right next to Aria, in case you're not familiar, offers a range of beautiful and delicious seasonal desserts rolled out to guests on a cute little cart. It's a little bit of old-school Vegas hospitality, but it's a tough choice between cheesecake with fresh summer berries, vanilla zeppoli with raspberry coulis and white chocolate anglaise, tiramisu with mascarpone cream, and more. Meanwhile, over at Mandalay Bay, Lupo does tableside pasta service. If you are obsessed with fresh pasta the way that I am, there's nothing better than having your dish finished right in front of your eyes from this cool pasta trolley with its own burner where the chef is putting the final touches on a truly delicious dish. It's a lot of fun, but what else would you expect from Wolfgang Puck, such a restaurant institution in Las Vegas? You can find more information and make your reservations right now at wolfgangpuck.com. We also want to give a quick shout out to Three Square Food Bank. Congratulations on another incredible restaurant week. Last month, the results from this year's event were announced, the 13th annual installment of Las Vegas Restaurant Week, which was held from June 17th to 28th. 203 restaurants from across the valley participated and raised a record total of more than $260,000 to help Southern Nevada's only food bank continue its fight against local hunger. That's going to help Three Square provide approximately 780,000 meals to food insecure residents, which is just amazing. Among the top earning restaurants this year were Charlie Palmer Steak, Mesa Grill, and Buddy V's. So extra special thanks and congratulations go out to those strip spots as well.
Fall is almost here, and that means there are more foodie events and festivals on September's calendar. Genevieve, what's coming up next month?
There are actually quite a few events for September, starting with the San Gennaro Feast on September 11. You can expect a lot of ethnic food vendors, arts and crafts, live entertainment, a lot of things for the kids. The admission is $10 for that event.
That's a really popular festival that Las Vegans absolutely love. Life is Beautiful just released their culinary lineup. What can we expect from that?
There are four main components this year to Life is Beautiful's culinary program. There's the Omakase Cantina, which is in partnership with Secret Burger, and they basically will put together events with chefs in town. And tickets for those are very hard to get, and also because it's very limited, so you might want to look early on secretburger.com. There will also be a farm stand event or activation. It's a vegan experience. There's a cookout with a lot of meat by Justin Kingsley Hall, and there's a cocktail school.
And then one of my favorite food events returns this month. It's the Greek Food Festival on September 27th.
Also on that same night, there's a big event at the Venetian called the Haute Cuisine with the Master Chefs of France. There will be 10 chefs at that event who will be putting together this incredible meal. So look out for that one.
Awesome. Let's wrap up this episode with the best things we ate this month. Genevieve?
Recently, well, a couple of nights ago, I actually had dinner at Charlie Palmer's Steak at Four Seasons. I think it's definitely one of the best steakhouses in town. I had a trio of tartares that I thought were outstanding, and each one was so different. There was an heirloom tomato tartare with a spicy avocado puree, and then there was a tuna tartare that had quite a kick to it, actually. And finally, there was a beef tartare with fried capers and fresh horseradish. I honestly could not tell you which one I loved best. They were all so good.
That sounds amazing. The best thing that I ate this month, actually, Genevieve, when you were looking in his fridge, Justin Kingsley Hall mentioned his friend and neighbor Dan Cromer, and Dan is opening his third restaurant this month at the renovated Ferguson Hotel downtown. It's a Mexican concept called La Monja, and Dan invited me in for a mock service to try some of the new dishes. Everything was really, really good, but the one thing that really blew me away, and I'm still thinking about it today, was a tomato aguachile. So this is traditionally a raw seafood dish made in a molcajete, sort of a ceviche type thing, but this one was so good. It had these really juicy local tomatoes, and they were kind of drowned in this sauce made with pineapple and cascabel chile. It also had these really meaty mushrooms and some Mexican herbs, purslin, which has some lemony and peppery flavors, and hoja santa, which has a little licorice flavor to it. The entire dish was really bright and fresh and so great, and I can't wait until it gets a little cooler so I can go back and sit on the patio at La Monja and eat this with a tecate and probably fall asleep for a nap on Fremont Street. That's my plan. Leslie, you took a pretty awesome summer vacation recently, and you were gone for a big chunk of August. Was the best thing you ate this month something beyond the boundaries of Las Vegas?
It was. I went to Jamaica the earlier half of August, and while I was there, I was on the mission to find the best jerk chicken on the island, the kind that I had just watched an Anthony Bourdain episode on Jamaica, so I was looking for the kind of chicken that he raved about in that episode, the kind that tourists don't really get to just stumble upon. So I ate jerk literally every day, sometimes multiple times a day, and nothing compared to the jerk chicken we got on the side of the road one afternoon. We were hanging out on the beach, and we had asked our tour guide, you know, we want the real deal, and he pulled over on the side of the road, and we got to eat jerk chicken prepared in a jerk drum, which they're actually discarded oil barrels. So they're cooked in this drum. You can find them pretty much all over the island on the side of the road. And I'd say it's more akin to like going to New York and getting a street hot dog. Like just nothing compares. That's how the locals eat it. It's smoky. It's sweet. There's some kick from the Scotch bonnet pepper. And that's definitely the best thing I ate all month. What about you, Cindy?
My best thing was something I bought for my birthday. which was earlier this week. Happy birthday to me. And I went to Weiss Deli, this neighborhood family deli, and I bought just a bunch of little pastries called Rugelach. And they were so delicious. They're like layered and let's see, it came in three different flavors. There was apricot and some sort of berry. I forget the berry.
Raspberry, probably.
Yeah. I think it was raspberry.
These people might have had one.
I definitely had one.
And also chocolate chip. And it was just so, so, so delicious that I brought enough to share with the office. But then I like almost didn't want to share by the time I got to the office. But I did share.
Well, that about wraps up this month's episode of Second Helping. If you liked what you heard, don't forget to subscribe on all of our channels and to come back in October when we put our cooking skills to the test with some of the Valley's local chefs. Thanks again to Sonia Barcelona for lending her track Violent Water for our theme song. Her debut album, Bitter Melon, comes out September 7th, so check that out and see you in October.